Hi everyone, you're listening to the Singapore Noodles podcast, where we look forward to a world where Singaporeans are proud of our rich and diverse food culture and play an active role in keeping traditions alive. I'm your host, Pamelia Chia, and this week I'm joined by Preston Wong, who is the CEO and lead innovator of Treatcha, which is a startup that tackles the problem of food waste with the power of technology and new solutions. The problem of food waste needs no introduction. In Singapore, 790,000 tons of food was wasted in 2015, a near 50% increase over a decade. In this conversation, Preston shares about how Treatcha provides a solution that addresses food waste while providing value to merchants and everyday consumers. Can you tell me about what your company does on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so our company deals with two areas of wastage primarily. One arm of it works with hotels, restaurants, buffet partners to actually reduce wastage on their end. So our customers, our app users, could go to the to those restaurants and pick up, take away basically food items at the end of every single meal slot, whether it be lunch or high tea or dinner. The last 30 to 60 minutes will be the time for them to go in and pack a box. So what we call buffet in a box, that they can fit items that they like from the buffet line into that box and take it away for a pretty decent, awesome $10 roughly kind of fee. And that is quite interesting, because usually you would go into a buffet, sit down for hours and go for a few rounds and pay like maybe 50 onwards perhaps. But yeah, so this is a one portion $10 plus serving that you take away.
Is it because the buffet, I mean the restaurants, are not able to serve, you know, overnight kind of food or like leftovers?
Definitely, because it has to be prepared fresh every meal. Right, not even talking about every day, but every meal, right? So once breakfast buffet, any of us who have been to, I guess, like a hotel, even on holiday, you'll notice like once the breakfast buffet closes, then they will have to clear it. And then the next one will be lunch. And then lunch will have a different menu, right, from breakfast. So they will have to cook, like prepare a fresh serving of each dish. And then at the end of lunch, again, it's cleared, and then prepare for high tea or dinner. And so it goes on and on. So this whole cycle ensures that, I guess, the food is constantly served as fresh and new, and there is no chance for them to actually, I guess, keep it or, like, you know, reheat it or anything or serve it. Because usually food has a, at least for the restaurant type of food, there is a time stamp of about 4 hours from the time it's prepared. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to actually keep it once it gets served out on the buffet line. True. I guess the only ones that are exceptional might be things like, for instance, this is a industry, I guess, not so close secret. It's quite an open secret, where croissants from the breakfast buffet can actually be used to make bread and butter pudding for, I guess, desserts or stuff like that. So actually, you can repurpose some of these breads or I guess you can make croutons out of it and stuff. So it's possible. But for the cooked food, like the curry or the roti prata that I was saying, once it's out, right? I mean, it's very hard to store the curry and serve it again. I don't think that's ideal. And for them, they'd rather prepare a fresh, nice batch each time there's a new meal slot. So that's the problem. There is no way in which, I guess the only way would be to digest it. And that's a very common method, which is to just throw it into a, you know, a machine that could convert it into some kind of compost or fertilizer. That's one possible outcome. The other one would be to...
Is that normally what happens?
It depends, because not every hotel owns a digester on site. Yeah. So disposal, or rather throwing it, is actually the easiest. But of course, if there is a machine, then they will throw it in the machine. But regardless whether you throw it in the bin or the machine, it's still... I mean, personally, I would feel the food that has reached that stage, you know, the finished prepared food, has taken the chefs a lot of effort. This one, hearing from the chefs themselves, I know, they actually do put in the heart and soul to their creations, right? So it's actually a lot of effort put into it only to be thrown into a bin or a digester machine. It's a waste either way. Yeah. Although one would argue that, I mean, of course, it's not a waste completely if you throw it into the digester, because in the end, it might be converted into fertilizer or energy or water or whatever. But to the chef, like, it's still being thrown. I mean, it's just... Yeah, it's just the
output. It costs the restaurant owners a lot of money as well, right?
I guess the ingredients, there are costs involved. So that's already set in place, right? The moment they buy the food ingredients, that's already accounted as cost. So it's not recoverable by any means. Therefore, we come in as a solution to help, I guess, recover some of that cost. Well, of course, not all, because there's just so much food, right, in a hotel setting. But at least some. So there's some kind of incremental recovery of revenue for some. Yeah. But ultimately, of course, I think it's also symbolic in terms of how people can play a part, because the hotel also wishes to bring in the community to, you know, to jointly reduce wastage together. So it's really a partnership between the business, the hotel, as well as I guess society. I mean, many of them see it that way, as a involvement, right, of people coming to the hotel to pick up the food. And And then, of course, if they like the food that much, they might come back again for other things. Yeah.
So prior to working with these restaurants, were you already aware of this problem, or was it something that you only discovered through working with them?
Well, I have actually seen buffet wastage. Like, I mean, any one of us who might have gone for a buffet meal, or maybe even had a buffet reception at a wedding or event, might see such instances of wastage. So I guess that's very common, because not just within hotel restaurants, right? It used to be in pre-COVID days that we had those receptions at our offices, or, you know, weddings, or even some funerals as well. So I guess, like, different occasions would have buffet lines set up, and there would be an issue with wastage. I've seen that myself. And I was exploring whether within a retail establishment context, so in the case of a buffet restaurant or hotel with so much food prepared every day, might there be an opportunity? So we spoke to some of our earlier hotel partners, like Grand Hyatt Singapore, Fairmont Singapore, Swissôtel the Stamford. I guess those were, Novotel as well, I guess some of those were actually very frank in telling us, like, the reality of the problem. They were not hiding or anything. They would say that this is the reality. It's true. There is such a situation. The only question is, how do we work around, like, I guess, the existing setups and operational processes to introduce something that is not in the market, but yet be able to move and to be able to reduce part of that excess food that we see. So that's why we came up with this, and it's still very new, and I think not everybody would know of it because of its novelty, and you might not find it in other countries. In fact, it's not found in other countries. We should be proud as Singaporeans. We have this in Singapore. The hotels are pioneering it, in that sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, from a third party's point of view, right, the question in my mind is, why can't these restaurants cook less food? I mean, if they are aware that there's so much leftovers and so much surplus, why can't they just cook less?
Well, that's a very good question, and that's a fair question that I ask myself, and I ask them at times also at the start of working with them. But I guess it's always challenging, because they are ultimately humans, and based on their own, you know, instincts and intuition, experience based on, like, their years of working in the kitchen and all that, I think they would estimate or forecast what's the right amount to produce or to prepare. But nobody ever has a accurate to the T kind of a prediction, because that's not human. I guess it would take probably technology to bridge that gap. But as of now, it would be largely estimation, guessing, forecasting, etc., based on the number of reservations that would come in. plus perhaps a bit of expectation on number of walk-ins, because recall, like for restaurants like these, it's not just the reservations, right? Sometimes there are people who just walk in, room guests, right? The dine-in, the in-house kind of guests who might just come down from their hotel rooms and they want a meal, right? They walk into the restaurant. So I guess it's a combination of these factors that make it very hard to gauge what's the correct or right amount. So on some days, there might be more, some days might be less. On some days, you might have, I guess, people who are taking less because it's a family, maybe that might be more, that might be less. I'm not too aware, but there are different factors basically at play. So many factors that could influence the ultimate surplus situation. But
true.
No doubt that they would have to prepare something, I guess, extra in case there is not enough. Just like, actually, if you think about it, in the past when we used, pre-COVID days, we used to have those buffet receptions or even meals that were catered, right, for events. There would always be, usually, the catering company would buffer or include like extra portions just to be safe in case there would not be enough. And it could be a cultural thing because for Asians, they don't like to be, you know, embarrassed, malu, right? If let's say there's not enough food or a banquet that doesn't have enough, or, you know, it just comes across as being stingy or not hospitable.
That's true. Especially for a buffet, right? Where you're used to seeing like heaps of food.
Enough for everybody. Because, or more than enough, actually. I mean, it should look presentable. It should be more than enough as a host. You would not want to have less. I guess it could be also the same for restaurants, because on the line, if you can imagine if the sushi was just like one piece and the prawn was just like one piece, and it doesn't really reflect or portray a good image of the restaurant. Like, they're very stingy. We paid like $50 or $100 for the buffet, but So there are all these kind of different factors at play, and just besides just the, now we're talking about a separate point, besides just the gauging of the correct amount to prepare, it's also about the appearance or the portrayal of an image that is hospitable, whether it be a hotel restaurant or whether it be even a household, right? A host that is trying to have an event. Yeah, it is actually a part of the Asian, I think, culture to be more generous and lavish with our food. And therefore, definitely, there will be room for extra excess.
Yeah. And how has the uptake of these buffet boxes been so far?
Well, I guess in the earlier years, pre-COVID days, we got to a good start. We actually had close to 20 buffet restaurants on board. And I guess even for people who tried, because not many people knew about it at that point in time, we were trying to actually broaden the market awareness to it. But we do know from statistics that those who have tried it at least once, half of them would come back a second time, at least in the earlier days. So that's encouraging. But for now, because in the past 1 to 2 years due to COVID, that part of the business has been disrupted many, many times. They closed and opened and closed and opened quite a number of times. So it's very hard to, you know, meaningfully compare data that way. It's really hard. And I guess for the consumers, there'll be a lot of lingering thoughts, whether is it open or is it not open. Or, and of course, besides that, there was a period of time where they were not even sure whether they should go to the hotels, right? They just wanted to stay out of the city. And we had a spike. I'm not sure whether you read the news while you were away. Late last year, there was actually two phases of closures, and because of two waves that were quite severe in Singapore. So that actually affected, I guess, confidence and also like in terms of the uptake more recently. But yeah, I think if hotels are reopening and the government is sticking to its plan to live with COVID, to be resilient, then we might see more people coming back to try it.
Yeah, for sure. It's such a good deal. I can imagine all the aunties queuing up to get the $10 buffet boxes.
But interestingly, besides the aunties, it's actually people of our age group, the millennials, that are that are actually very interested in it. I mean, in the past when we had more data, because that time was more regular, right? We would see people, young millennials, I guess, like going for a post-workout meal at our hotels, and they would load up, I guess, a lot of good protein and good salads and vegetables from there as well. So it's actually a good option because it's, I mean, you can take all you want in that box and the sizing is quite generous. And it's not, it doesn't hurt the pocket that much. It's quite value for
Definitely. Money. So that is one arm of your business. What about the other arms?
Well, the other one is for people who would buy groceries. And this is an option for surplus grocery purchases. So when we say surplus groceries, we are dealing with the wastage that happens as a result of having either near expiry products or imperfect products or excess products stockpiled in the warehouses. We typically would see our suppliers, which are largely distributors and wholesalers, and some grocery retailers, provide us some of these excess stock, expiring stock, or blemished, imperfect stock. And these are actually things that may not be accepted generally in the market. So when we talk about, say, supermarkets, the big supermarkets, or even retailers, even e-commerce websites, the big ones, right, that will deal with groceries, sometimes it's not accepted due to different reasons. Appearance could be one big reason. People are not too comfortable with seeing like a dented or torn, you know, packaged product, or you know, a label that's scratched or some crease on the item. Those are very common. And then of course, like near expiry shelf life, short shelf life items are often a cause for concern, because for the e-commerce platforms or even the supermarkets, I think they will want as long as possible, right? So that the customers can get like the longest shelf life. And you would see them put up like, I guess, the ones that are shortest, and as a consumer, sometimes we reach into the shelf and grab the one that is like, I guess, the furthest from the current date. And then we take that. And then those that are of nearer expiry, we tend to just not choose them. So what happens to them? And that's, I guess, where we come in. That's where we come in to actually provide a new channel for such unwanted or perhaps short-dated products. And it can be as short as really just a few days, because things like dairy products are very perishable. We have dairy products like milk, yogurt, eggs, cheese, etc. Those are really short shelf life. So we could be talking about like them expiring in a few days' time if they list on our app. This week we have milk coming in from one of our partners, F&N, that would be expiring just next week.
So can you just help me picture this scenario? So basically they would sell Treat Germ, their all these items like ugly produce and products that are expiring, and then Treat Germ will store it in your own warehouse and, you know, channel it to consumers in that way?
Actually it's a very lean model, because there's just so much food out there, right? And we have so many different partners. Currently, the model is such that customers on our app, the Treatsurers, would place orders with us like how they would on any other shopping platform, right? And then make that purchase, that order. And then once your order is confirmed and you select the date that you want it to be shipped to you or collected from us, we offer self-pickup as well. Then we'll get it arranged in terms of the bulk quantity that we can get from different suppliers. The different items, whether it be fruits, vegetables, or packaged goods, or dairy products, etc., we would try to get them in.
That makes sense. So it comes as a full box. Amazing.
Yeah, a bag. Most of the time it's a box. Yeah, sometimes if it becomes too big, it becomes a box. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that's another arm.
Yeah, that's the other arm, that is groceries. And so besides the surplus kind of groceries, so these are what we term surplus, because it deals squarely with the issue of food wastage in the grocery industry. So it's grocery food wastage. But we also have the sustainable type of groceries, which involves us to consider new options, sustainable alternative options to food and non-food. So non-food products are also available as an alternative. So some examples would be things like soaps, soaps that were upcycled from olive oil. We have them.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's a play with, I guess, food as well, because it involves the surplus olive oils that we sell. So the olive oil hit a certain expiry date. They can't be consumed. Actually, they can be, but they can't be sold as consumables. So we would then collaborate with, I guess, our olive oil partner and a soap maker to convert them into soaps.
That's so interesting. So it's like a whole ecosystem.
It is. But for selective products, of course. Selective products. We can't, some things are more difficult to convert than other things. So we have to find ways to basically make sure that nothing is wasted over here. Once it arrives here, if we do have access or if the supplier does have access, we'll try our best.
Yeah.
Although that's also very hard at times because the numbers are staggering. The amount of wastage can be quite a lot. So for those that we can help, or we can try to think of ways to either make sure that it doesn't go to waste in the bin, we will do so. Yeah. Mm. So we have soaps. We have things like beeswax wraps. Beeswax wraps are, like, I guess, another product as an alternative to the plastic cling wrap. But also beeswax wrap help to preserve and extend the shelf life of food because they wrap them quite well as storage accessories.
Yeah.
And then we have the usual sustainability merchandise that we will encourage people to have. Reusable tea bags, reusable straws, reusables, cups, etc. Yeah, I guess the more common ones, we do have them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the general population, I guess, are still not into all these sustainable merchandise because they are usually, I guess, in terms of the price points, higher than what we are used to for our common plastic alternatives or other alternatives that are really much cheaper. So it does take a bit of a mindset or even a shift in terms of the attitudes of people.
But it's very interesting, your business model. It sounds like a very collaborative approach where, you know, you work with a lot of suppliers and a lot of different partners. Is it difficult, you know, for you as a business owner to run such a business?
I guess you're right to say that it's collaborative. And the collaborations extend beyond just the buying and selling of products. Because in that case, then we'd be more towards an e-commerce, strictly e-commerce kind of model. But as you can see, it's not happening that way. There are a lot of collaborations going on to make sure that, I guess, whatever we do, it's centered around the reduction of food wastage and promoting attitudes towards treating food as treasure, right? Treasure. So the idea of collaboration also involves making new things out of the unwanted or the excess expiring goods. So we have actually collaborated with some of them for their ingredients to turn it into something new. That's actually interesting because, for instance, if we do have excess chocolates, we've done excess we've converted it into chocolate cake, chocolate chip cookies, etc. before, and then reselling it as a new product. So so from time to time, there are these surprises and these limited edition kind of products that we would bake, and we would, of course, not us directly, we would get the professionals to do it for us, like pastry chefs and all.
Yeah. So for example, if you have like an ingredient, like a surplus ingredient, will you guys think of the idea, like, you know, the product that you want to upcycle, and then you reach out to maybe makers or like crafts people to come up with that product?
That's the idea. So as to make sure that whatever that passes through our hands doesn't end up as waste. And I'm very glad that over the past few years since we handled the groceries, at least, like, it's minimal. I wouldn't say that there is no waste, but it's very minimal. It's very, very low. Yeah, very, very minimal. So whatever that can be turned into something would be actually converted into something interesting. I mean, we've done quite a lot of experimentations with different bakers. We call them mystery bakers. Cakes, cookies, pastries, things that can be consumed and frozen as well. Sometimes many times we freeze them because when you freeze them, you can actually eat them for long. Yeah, so some of the pastries, even though it's frozen, is actually quite nice, like frozen cakes, frozen cheesecakes, etc.
Yeah. So one word that I heard you use just now was treacherous. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't coin that term actually, Pamela. I didn't coin that term. Actually, along the way, I think some of our team members, the interns and all, I think they just gave that spin to that.
Yeah, but I love that. I feel that, you know, it points towards building kind of a community.
Yep.
A community of people who share the same kind of values and who want to basically reduce their carbon footprint. From the perspective of a business, how do you cultivate this community?
I guess at this point, I mean, it's not easy. We are over 30,000 in terms of the user base.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, but it's still a lot of personal. I mean, some would say that it's actually not a very effective way of, you know, like reaching out, right? I mean, or even like having such personal contacts with like individual users. But we try our best. We really, really try our best to remember names, remember usernames, remember like their preferences and all. It's not easy, but yeah, I mean, the more times you actually say food with us, of course, the more we'll remember you. But there are people who are, yeah, very memorable because we've either met them at the buffet restaurants, like just chatting with them, like their motivations for helping to save food, or even things like I guess social media. Sometimes we do see them sharing about us with the things that they get from us. I think Devon is a very good example. Yeah, I mean, yeah. These are relationships that we value, like, we treasure. We thank them for all their, not just their support for our business, but also I guess like their own mini, like, you know, efforts.
Just to give the listeners some context as to who Devon is. So Devon is actually a member of Singapore Noodles, yeah. And she was the one who introduced me to Treacher and like the work that they do, because Devon is very into this live lightly, you know, lower your carbon footprint kind of thing. And so yep. I was asking her a question, which was, you know, how can Singaporeans embody that kind of ethos, you know? Because now Devon is based in Taiwan, in rural Taiwan, and she kind of grows her own vegetables, sources direct from farmers. Right. And so, you know, I really wanted to see how that kind of philosophy could be applied to a Singaporean context. And she pointed me towards you guys.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen her in a while, so I hope she's doing well in Taiwan. But definitely, I think during the circuit breaker, for sure, this I remember, because, yeah, I think she did save quite a lot of different grocery ingredients. And then I think she also cooked some things out of it and shared quite frequently with her friends and family. Yeah.
So is that all of the arms of your business? Did we cover everything?
No. So this is purely with the work on the app, right? In terms of the direct platform that we're talking about. But outside of the app, we also do other things. So one of the things that we've been working on the past few years, I guess, is a lot of education and sharing. So that's part of, I guess, also advocacy. So Treacher serves beyond just an e-commerce platform, right? We don't want to be just another e-commerce platform. We don't want to be just a platform where you get deals and discounts. So that's why the term that we always coin is ideals beyond deals. Ideals of basically sustainability and sharing about the whole issue. Since we are, I guess, one of the pioneers in this space, we've seen how this has evolved. We want to share our learnings as well as we grow, as we journey along sustainability. So education and sharing with different corporates, different schools, and organizing events and workshops and learning journeys has been something that we are very happy to do, like outside of our main kind of business or main work. And of course, like, it's not a big part of what we do, meaning to say that it doesn't take up like every day or doesn't take up the whole week. But yeah, sure. these are actually meaningful interactions. Like just yesterday, we were at one of the polytechnics in Singapore. So we were doing a sharing on, I guess, food wastage and how the youths, largely polytechnic students, could contribute. Mm. So I think that's very meaningful, because then they would, one day they would become working adults. One day they would, have purchasing power, right? For, like, I guess, groceries or even meals. then they can take ownership of that because it starts at a young age. So by reaching schools and all that, it's great that, yeah, unfortunately, the education curriculum is still undergoing changes. The ministries are still working into incorporating sustainability into the education for our, you know, very young children and students. I think it'll take a while, but as of now, organizations like us plug the gap in, you know, this. Sometimes we also share with teachers. We've done a learning journey with teachers before. Teachers are also not fully equipped or not fully aware of some of these sustainability issues. So we actually do that our part, I guess, in terms of sharing and in terms of equipping them with some kind of a, at least like a foundational knowledge.
For sure. I think it's so, so important, this segment of the work that you do. I mean, advocacy and really educating young children.
Yeah, or even corporates, like when we talk about corporates, exactly. Right? They are actually the change makers. So the managers, the staff behind the corporations, they can then internalize and consider how then can their organizations become more sustainable. Because every organization can always rethink, you know, in terms of the practices and the policies, right? How, what can we do? And what can we? How can we make like this year a more sustainable year for our operations? I think that's something that it's a journey, Ma, right? So every company should always go through this review, like how you review your targets and objectives. It's setting like for this new year, maybe we can you know, consider using less paper or consider switching to other alternatives for food sources if they have like food operations, etc. So there are ways in which we can always like fine-tune, improve, and make it more sustainable for the staff and also for the organization in general, for its customers.
Yeah, so true. What I really love is that you guys are a values-led business, and you know, you have an overarching mission, and it is a mission that is very countercultural. Would you agree? It's something that, you know, is not that common. My question to you would be: what keeps you going, and how do you stay positive, and motivated in the work that you do?
On a personal level, there is of course faith that can keep me like strengthened. Then of course, like in bad times or like difficult times, then I can always pray that things will improve, and that's always faith. But outside of that, like on a business level, then we have people that encourage us continuously, and that I mean by our community of our, you know, the treasurers, the merchants, partners, right? And when we talk about partners, it's not just the merchant suppliers that are our partners or the hotel partners, not just those partners, but there are also partners which support us in our work, that are corporate partners or governmental partners. I think they believe in what we do. So for one, like a shout out to, for example, DBS Bank. I think they have been one of the organizations that have been supporting us quite a lot the past few years. They have been very eager to actually share about us internally with their staff, as well as externally to their stakeholders. So they've done quite a lot in that aspect. And again, it's because they champion social entrepreneurship and the whole zero waste cause. I think that's something that they are very, very mindful of. We have also governmental agencies that are our partners. They constantly also share about us. And also even the civil servants and the, you know, the public officers, right, that believe in what we do. So right from the very start, in a few years ago, as I mentioned, like a few years back when we were nobody and the scene was not that crowded or not that populated with so many initiatives, I guess we were one of the early ones that touched base with them and kept the relationship strong with, I guess, government agencies that this is something that we have been doing. So we are not a fly-by-night business as well. We've been here for many, many years, and we've always tried to, I guess, like bring good values of sustainability to our mainstream audience, right? And not just that, you know, echo chamber of conscious folks, like individuals. The goal should always be to make it mainstream, right? To make the message of sustainability, reducing food wastage, as mainstream as possible. What point is there if it's just within that echo chamber, right, of eco-conscious people? So I think for us, we can break the barrier because actually for us, price is actually not a big issue, unlike other sustainable merchandise that may face challenges of accessibility because of the price point issues. So I would think that, yeah, surplus food is actually a good bridge, because it can show people that actually things can be affordable, and yet it is good stuff. Now, if you don't mind the exterior and you don't mind the short-dated condition of the food and all that, if you look beyond that. So I guess the greater maxim, or the greater teaching behind this would be that we've got to look beyond, I guess, just the imperfections and the conditions of food, or the things that we actually don't see would be, I guess, the inner beauty and the intrinsic value, right? The intrinsic value of food. So things that are expiring, it doesn't mean that it's spoiled. Neither are things that are dented or torn in packaging necessarily bad. So a lot of discernment is involved to see whether the food is actually, can still be consumed or not, which I think for us, we're trying bit by bit, every single article of food that has this kind of conditions, we're trying to let people know. So on our app, you'd see conditions are actually stated as a line. We would tell people condition expiring in how many days, etc., that kind of thing, or it's torn and all that. I think that's very weird for a platform to have, because usually things won't be that, honestly disclosed, but we have to, because then again, it's a different kind of food products or products from others.
Yeah.
We are always thinking of that as in sharing that with people. And of course, another area that we've always been looking at that is keeping us going, if you're asking about keeping us going, is the progress that we've made in terms of the needle that we've shifted or moved in society over the past few years as well, right? Contributing to this dialogue. It's very meaningful to be part of that process, and that keeps us continually going and growing. The chance to contribute. So in a way, this business is contributing to society, not just in terms of the food saved, but I would define it broader to be the contribution to the food wastage sustainability dialogue or discourse in Singapore. Because some people, there is one person, one of our treasurers left a sticky note in our shop here. We actually have a concept store in the CBD as well for people to pick up their goods. She left a note saying that to her, Trisha is like a symbol of sustainability since she got to know about it, because we stand for basically that message of food wastage for sustainability. So it's become a symbol for her personally, and she thanks us for being, part of that.
Wow, that's amazing.
I guess being a pioneer or to start in this space is great. To keep it going is, I guess, even harder. To keep it going amidst all the pandemic is very, very hard. But we have gone through different waves, different progressions and evolutions. So I think that keeps us going.
Yeah. I feel that what's great about your app is that it makes living a sustainable lifestyle or a more sustainable lifestyle accessible. Because I think a lot of people, when they think about sustainability or environmentalism, they'll be like, I have to spend a lot of money on ethically made clothes, I have to buy free range pork or free range chicken. But I think, what you're doing is giving people a very easy way, an easy in to change the way that they live.
I think that's one. And also, I guess, the other message that we are also sharing with not just consumers, but businesses, is that technology can actually, play a part in addressing such issues, such really thorny issues. So for us, at the core of it, the app, if you take away the app, is actually an interest or a desire to use technology to empower behavioral changes. And that's something that we're working on, I guess, over the years. It's a bigger project that we have, to actually go deeper and study why is it that there are such, behaviors going on. Because food wastage is not just about, as I mentioned, producing too much. It's also about a lot of other factors that can result in the wastage or the excess, right? It might take like some kind of a deeper study or bigger study to uncover root causes and even propose predictions and, you know, ways in which that that wastage can be reduced further. And there are companies that are doing that, but there is just so much to cover in from different angles.
That's true. Can I ask you why you decided to develop an app? I mean, like, you know, a typical company would just have a browser, like a website for people to access. So why an app?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And many times along the way, we actually felt that, maybe a website could do it better as well. But at that point in time when we wanted the app, right, I think number one, I mean, this is from a personal founder point of view, right, at the start. The first was that I think we were inspired by the many apps that came out around the period that we started, just before the golden years of basically consumer apps, the rise of consumer apps. Think about all the basically the ride-hailing apps, the property apps, the sharing marketplace kind of Airbnb and carousels and all that. I think those actually played quite a big inspirational role, because that period, that window where they grew phenomenally in terms of like consumer usage, the early 2010s basically, was when the period where we started to see and get inspired. And then when we started this in the mid-2010s, around 2016, I think that was the time where we felt that, maybe we could also play a part in coming up with another app that could revolutionize, I guess, the way we share food. At that point in time, actually, there wasn't much of a technology involved. It was mostly food distribution charities and, you know, like ground up kind of NGOs doing the, you know, the redistribution to charities if there's surplus food. So there wasn't any technology used. And so we thought maybe a funky, cool app that could come on board and, like, you know, change the way we buy and sell such surplus food, or even give away such surplus food.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally, at that point in time, I was actually witnessing my family members throwing out food from the refrigerator. So I asked myself whether I could build a platform such that people could just easily upload, take a snapshot of the food that was in their fridge, and if they wanted to, they could give it away or, you know, sell it to someone. That was the very initial idea. So if you ask me why it was like that, it was because of the initial problem statement or initial idea. And then of course when we talked to F&B, we realized that a location based kind of a function would be helpful, and therefore an app came into play, because the very very early iteration of the Treatshare app was not hotels, neither was it groceries. It was really about local mom and pop shops, F&B, heartland kind of bakeries and confectioneries, if you trace back in time. That was where we started, actually. The very, very beginnings was unlike, it's not quite like the business that we see today. Very, very different. We would work with individual mom and pop shops in the heartlands, even in very far-flung neighborhoods. And then if there is excess food somewhere in, for example, MacPherson, someone would actually post it there. The shop owner would post it and the individual users would go there and pick it up for themselves. So that was the very initial version one of the app, which required the app for convenience, I guess, like location tracking and all.
Yeah, wonderful. I feel that it's so revolutionary what you're doing. I have one last question for you, and that is, what is the hope that you hope to see, or the change that you would hope to see in Singapore's food scene in the coming years?
Well, I guess it's embracing more surplus ingredients into the menu. So that is something that we think that there is a good opportunity there for restaurants, for chefs to consider repurposing ingredients into new items. So we've already seen that in terms of the upcycling or upcycled products that have been made. So from beers to chips to all that. But I guess the next wave we would hope to see would be F&B outlets also considering that and incorporating more surplus ingredients into procurement, and as well as, I guess, like their menu options. That's one. Second one, of course, would be in terms of the local produce, right? Definitely would hope to see more varieties and options. Right now, kind of limited in a sense, like there are only a few types, right? But I believe with further R&D, they might be able to replicate like non-tropical conditions for certain types of produce. That would be exciting to see. That would be a hope that we can have some of these, you know, varieties that are not currently seen here. And besides just fruits and vegetables, of course, we would hope to see even things like, I think they're trying it out now, things like rice and noodles, pasta and all that coming from Singapore itself also. That would be very helpful because we need as well, right? I guess all these carbohydrates and alternative nutrient sources rather than just the vegetables and fruits. So that would be very interesting to see.
Well, thanks, Preston, for, you know, sharing about your business so candidly and also for inspiring me and all our listeners about how we can shift our mindsets, you know, and basically change our lifestyles. So thank you for coming on the podcast and thanks for chatting with me today.
Thank you.
That wraps up this episode of the Singapore Noodles podcast. You have been listening to Preston Wong, who is the CEO and lead innovator of Treature. We now stand at the crossroads where we are witnessing the vanishing of traditional dishes and the gradual erosion of our rich food culture. Now more than ever, we have to encourage one another to get back into the kitchen and start cooking dishes from our heritage. Singapore Noodles is offering a membership dedicated to equipping anyone with everything that they need to start cooking local. Go to sgpnoodles.com to find out more. Once again, thank you for listening to the Singapore Noodles podcast, where we look forward to a world where Singaporeans are proud of our rich and diverse food culture and play an active role in keeping our traditions alive.